This is the Morning Mayhem with Howard Feltman and the team. The best start to your day.
Rolene Marks, good morning to you. How are you?
I love the way you say that. Oh, Rolene Marks. A shot of common sense is what that
right. Is. Exactly. Sort of arm yourself by getting one in the arm. I think we could work on that line, right?
We could certainly work with that. You heard it here first, people.
You really did. You absolutely did. And also what you're going to hear first is the fact that the budget has been passed in Israel. This was a potentially very dangerous moment for the new government, wasn't it?
Absolutely. This was the biggest test that this coalition government was set to face, was the passing, albeit by a very narrow margin, of 61-59. And in the words of Finance Minister Avigdor Lieberman, this is the most social budget in the history of the state. So I'm kind of loving the selfies coming from inside the Knesset, but kol hakavod to Prime Minister Bennett and his government for finally, after 3.5 years, 4 elections, Israel has a budget. We can get to the most important work, like actually getting to work. And the best thing of all is we have no election coming up in 3 months' time.
Yeah, that really is quite, I don't think I have the emotional maturity to deal with another election. But let's just talk about that. Why is it so difficult to pass a budget in Israel?
Well, there are so many discussions and debates around where the money goes. And, you know, Israel being the robust democracy that it is, and with so many different political parties, with so many different interests. And, of course, I have to mention here that we have a very virulent and aggressive opposition that wanted at all costs to ensure that the passing of this budget did not happen. They wanted to do as much as they could to try and force it to not be passed, and that we would go to yet another election cycle, which is, you know, if you understand Israeli law, the law states that a budget has to be passed, failing that, the government is dissolved and we go to elections. And Israel does not want or need another election cycle at this moment. But a lot of debate about where the money goes. And what we do know coming out of this is that we've seen a serious increase in the amount of money that will go to improving the socioeconomic situation for the Arab minority community, which is something that has been neglected over many years. A massive chunk of change going towards our new pivot towards green tech, fighting climate change. Also shows you where Israel is looking at the moment, looking at ways to bring down the very high cost of living here, a big chunk going to making changes in the Kashrut area, whereas the Rabbi Nut will still be in charge. We will have other organizations, smaller organizations that will be given the ability to give Kashrut licenses, albeit still within the framework of the Rabbi Nut, which ends a monopoly that is very, very costly for small businesses. So this is where we are seeing a lot of money going, and we can't neglect a huge, huge, huge increase in the defense and security budget, as we increasingly seem to have to face down a aggressive Iran and their proxies on our borders. So very, very happy Israel today. I think the Prime Minister is going to spend his weekend having a good shlof. Who can blame him? It's been a busy week for him. Yeah. And we can now get to work.
Absolutely right. But in the meantime, we started talking last week about the Prime Minister, Bennett, taking more of an international, increasing his international profile. And we've certainly seen this over COP26 as well, him hobnobbing and rubbing shoulders really with the best of them. What's been the reaction to that in Israel?
There's been an extremely positive reaction. You know, he took a massive delegation of 140 on a commercial flight, I might just add. I love to see the LL commercial flight standing out like a sore thumb against the private jets or
absolutely
parked on the tarmac.
Because nothing screams climate change awareness like your private jets and all your vehicles that you've schlepped in from around the world, right?
Absolutely, and I did enjoy Prince William saying to people, "Got to run, got a train to catch." That was a less than subtle dig
at
some of the world leaders flying in on their private jet. But taking a delegation, we had the horrible upset this week with our Minister of Energy, Karine El-Khara, who was unable to access the plenary hall because it was not wheelchair friendly. And for me, the mark of a statesman, which is what the whole country is saying that Prime Minister Bennett really became this week when he escorted her in the next day and brought her along to meetings with the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. But it was the Prime Minister taking to the international arena, talking about what Israel has to offer the world. Very comfortable in that space because we can't forget that he's not just a politician. He was also a major tech company head. So he's used to raising the finances for big tech. But really good to see him. And we all are feeling that the man that we had a lot of trepidation about just several months ago coming from this far right party, but who has stepped in to lead a very, very inclusive coalition government, who we see talking to world leaders, including the Crown Prince of Bahrain, very, very important meeting that. Meetings with Boris Johnson, Narendra Modi, Justin Trudeau, even though his first words to him reportedly were, "I wish I had your hair." But we kind of love that about him, that he has almost a modesty about him. And of course, for me, the best picture of all was him with the Duchess of Cambridge, also known as Kate Middleton, apparently talking about engaging young people in climate change. So Israel definitely leaving a mark on the COP26 stage. And for many people who said, how is he going to follow his predecessor's footsteps? You know, Netanyahu was such an orator on the international stage. I think Bennett this week has proven that he might have a little bit more of a quiet modesty. You saw him looking a little starstruck in some stages this week, but he can hold his own, and the general feeling, especially amongst the center, is he made us very proud.
Really just incredible, really amazing to see. And what I find so phenomenal is how this wasn't anticipated, that people really assumed the worst around him, but yet somehow he has managed to I think do himself and the country very proud on the international stage.
Absolutely. You know, the defining image for me will be him escorting Karine El-Khara into her wheelchair, into the plenary, to ensure that she did not miss out. Now, she's from Meretz. She's from a party that's the complete opposite end of the spectrum to his Yamina HaKadosh, and that shows you, and he spoke about it openly, that, you know, Israel has this new coalition government that maybe is a model that other countries could or should be adopting, that, you know, we are inclusive, that despite our differences in opinion on many, many different areas and issues, we can come together for the good of the country, and the good of the country is the most important. You know, massive eye roll in Israel at the start of COP when the Palestinian representative Dr. Mohammed Shtayeh used the opportunity that everyone was using to find global solutions. He did kind of a Greta Thunberg and basically blamed the situation for Palestinian environmental issues on Israeli occupation. Mm. Those were his words. And, you know, if I was there, Howard, I would say to him, what about your burning of agricultural land and pumping sewage into the sea and setting fire to donkeys, which is so appalling, I'm at a loss for words, or lighting rubber tires, creating a horrible ecological disaster. But I suppose I wouldn't be invited to the Q&A with Minister Shtayeh. there.
Exactly. That's why you weren't there. Let's just talk about the PA suspending Palestinian NGOs.
Well, let's take a look at this, because there's been a lot of criticism against Israel for the designation of six Palestinian NGOs as linked to terror organizations. And, you know, we have heard from the Irish foreign minister who was in Israel earlier this week. Ireland, certainly not the greatest friend of Israel, basically say, yes, but you didn't provide enough evidence. Maybe they just don't like to know where their money is going, and it's not going to fund, you know, fluffy projects. But Khaled Abu Tawameh, somebody who we really should listen to, he's one of the most respected Arab journalists in the country, writing an expose this week, basically saying, you know, a lot of criticism has been leveled at Israel, yet nobody is looking at the Palestinian Authority that has been targeting hundreds of Palestinian NGOs as part of an effort to control them, but also to take their funds. Sounds a lot like Hamas. He says, unlike Israel, the Palestinian Authority is not targeting the NGOs because of their affiliation with terrorism, but because they have been critical of the Palestinian Authority leadership, and Abbas wants to silence them. I don't know. I don't think the New York Times got the memo on that. Human Rights Watch most certainly did not get the memo on that, but it just shows the glaring hypocrisy and double standards of the international community, that it's very easy to criticize Israel, but you're forgetting to take a look under the microscope again and see how the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, I mean, we know what the situation for any NGO who's opposed to Hamas is in the Gaza Strip.
Just, can we just, we don't have a lot of time, but I'd like to see where this hashtag sort of sad in Israel came from. I started seeing a lot of it on social media, and I'm not quite certain about the, what it all meant.
Okay, so this backstory to that is the New York Times surprise.
Yeah.
One of their journalists, Patrick Kingsley, wrote an article about how he traversed the length and breadth of Israel, and basically, we are miserable, we are divided, we are polarized. Our towns are garish, which I take huge exception to, because Mr. Kingsley, if you are listening, I mean, you never know, Howard. We are millennia years old. You know, we don't need to pretend to be anything other than what we are, which is the land of the prophets and the land of our forefathers. We don't need to have, you know, huge buildings, etc., etc. But basically, Howard, his conclusion is that we are a miserable bunch, that we are a whole lot of sad people. I think he was very, very, very selective in the examples he used in his op-ed. If you want to read it, it's called Whose Promised Land? And from the get-go, you can see that he came with an agenda, which is very much the New York Times agenda. Incidentally, an article was also published about the next generation clergy in America who are not extolling Zionism. So I don't know what they're going to do about the Torah, because it's full of references to Zion.
Yeah, which can always rewrite
in Jerusalem. Just saying, but the response to that was many of us took to social media to show pictures of us smiling and enjoying life in Israel, to say, sad, sad Israel. Look how sad we Israelis are.
The absurdity of it is, of course, in all of the research and all of the surveys, Israel consistently comes out as being one of the happiest nations in the world.
Well, that's just it. We've just been ranked the 12th happiest nation in the world. I mean, this is a country that just several months ago had a massive flare-up with our neighbors Hamas, and had rockets pummeled on us. 4 hours straight for 11 days, and yet we still ended up being pretty happy.
Yeah, which is just weird. Which is just weird. It's phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. Raleen Marks, thank you. As always, interesting conversations. Amazing that the budget has been passed. I'm wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, a fantastic weekend, and we'll catch you next week.